Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
I'm Brian Hyatt. This is Rolling Stone Music Now. Today, we're going to be celebrating the 30th anniversary of one of the greatest albums ever made, Wu-Tang Clan's Enter the Wu-Tang 36 Chambers. And to talk about that album, I have Rolling Stone's Andre G with us, and then we're going to play Andre's interview with Raekwon about making the album. We were also supposed to have an interview with Ghostface Killah, but he kind of ghosted on us, which I guess is appropriate. But it's been 30 years since Enter the Wu-Tang 36 Chambers. November 9th, 1993, the same day Midnight Marauders came out by Tribe Called Quest. Very good hip-hop day, strong hip-hop year, strong hip-hop era. But yeah, I mean, Enter the Wu-Tang and the whole Wu-Tang Clan phenomenon was so unique on so many levels. I guess one of the biggest was just the size of the group and the master plan that RZA had for this. He was like Stan Lee or Kevin Feige. He had this whole universe he was going to set out. And the crazy thing is the plan worked, right? I mean, there were these nine incredibly talented guys, all somehow from the same area in Staten Island. And, you know, not every single one of them became solo superstars, but a large number did.
I've always said about, like, the Wu-Tang Clan, it's literally a miracle that they came together. You probably can't find nine people in a city now, like, in the whole of New York City, that could, like, parallel their impact. And they're in the same borough, like, damn near the same, like, general area of the borough. And RZA got everybody on one accord. Some people initially weren't even cool with each other. For them to align the way they did, for them to find each other is literally, like, a miracle. And, yeah, for RZA to have the foresight to say, okay, we're going to kick down the door together, and then we're going to roll it out individually. And I want this guy to go first for this reason. And then I want just to be so deliberate about the rollout is just brilliant on his part.
It's wild that only just a little bit more than 2 years earlier, in July of 91, RZA was out with a record under the name Prince Rakim with that song, Ooh, I Love You, Rakim. Always satisfied him. You know how I flow. With sex, I'm not lazy. I'm buck wild and crazy. I kiss the bosoms, but never eat the... Which was a totally different and kind of corny lover man pop hip-hop thing that did not succeed. And he listened at that point to the label. The label said, hey, you can be this cute guy rapper and kind of rap for an audience of women and you'll have a big pop hit and it's all going to work and you'll become famous, and it totally flopped. And I think that helped him realize, no, I'm going to do the exact opposite. I'm going to have complete control. The label's not going to tell us anything and we're going to make our own thing and make our own fortune and make our own corner of the music industry. And that's kind of what this whole thing was, in addition to a great and classic album.
Yeah, fool me twice. Basically, if he were to go around and try to do the conventional thing once again and still not have been successful, then who knows if he would have tried a third time. But yeah, once you try their way and it doesn't necessarily succeed in the way you might have been planning, yeah, why not just go about it your way? 36 Chambers, obviously, like, sonically and just everything, is so, like, nonconformist. But then at the same time, RZA, Jizza, who had prior industry experience, they were able to carry that experience into the album rollout. It was very divergent sonically, but they still had a little bit of know-how to know, like, okay, this is how things, like, navigate in the industry. They had the really unique product, but then they also knew what to do with it because of that prior experience in the industry, especially RZA and Jizza.
So Protect Your Neck came first. The rebel, I make more noise than heavy metal. The way I make the crowd go wild. Sit back, relax, won't smile. Ray got it going on, pal. Call me the... That was the independent single they recorded, and they each had to put in a little bit of money for the recording. I think Ghostface Killah, who had money from the streets, paid for the people who couldn't afford it. And that single became a sensation, and that paved the way for the album and the whole thing.
We're inundated with so much music that I don't think we appreciate the value of one song. Trying to craft every element of the drums, the sample, making sure he sampled it in the manner that he felt was best, just putting it together, arranging it in a way that all the artists on the track could have their moment and it still sound fresh and still have movement.
He changed the beat, he changed the order that the rappers appear on it. Everything had to be right.
Yeah, exactly.
It's also, of course, an unfathomably huge milestone in New York rap as well.
I was thinking about this in prep for the episode. Is this like the first East Coast, quote unquote, event album? I think we're inundated with, okay, last time I was on here, we talked about Travis Scott and how momentous and huge he wanted Utopia to be. And you hear that with the production choices and just all the movement and such. And I think most people would say like The Chronic might have been like the first album that represented that in general, just because Dr. Dre curated so much and he has so many different artists on the album. But I feel like for the East Coast, like the way RZA orchestrated and curated that album, with even so much of the movement on the album production wise, like it's like you hear it subtly, you hear it and like he'll drop the drums here for two to four bars. He'll add like a synth or like some kind of effect just to provide the movement and keep it fresh. But it's not like how we're used to hearing, like, I guess it's not like how we're used to hearing a super produced song at 23 with the beat switches and all of that. And like, it, for the most part, it'll be like the same loop, the same melody, but you'll hear the movement within the percussion and within the subtle elements. And I think that was a really brilliant production and curation, quote unquote, by RZA there.
And then, yes, as far as RZA's production, the griminess, some of which wasn't even on purpose, had to do with the limitations of the equipment, as he's told me and many other interviewers. There were tons of limitations on the equipment he was using. It didn't even have the ability to generate the kind of low end it should have. So there's a certain kind of missing sub bass on the album, which lends it that grimy lo-fi feel. And the use of soul samples obviously was really important and something that we're still hearing echoes of. And then there was, of course, the whole Kung Fu movie Wu-Tang aesthetic, which was wildly, singularly unique and so brilliant to transpose their lives on Staten Island into this Kung Fu reality. And it's always so fascinating to me how much RZA shares a sensibility with Quentin Tarantino. And of course, they're buddies because they have this same love for all that stuff and that whole thing of transposing this Asian pop culture into an American context.
Yeah, absolutely. It's just the allegorical nature of, like you said, just fusing the martial arts elements, the movies, the themes with what they were going through in Staten Island. A lot of great art fuses universal themes across regions. But yeah, just the way that RZA was able to make that one of their defining themes and something that made them distinctive.
And I think one of the things that's hard to wrap our heads back around 30 years later is no one had heard of any of these rappers before this album.
Right.
So many of these people are legends now and we know their style so well, but that was the first time we're hearing Ghostface.
Catch the blast of a hype verse. My clock burst, leaving a hearse. I did worse. I come rough, tough like an elephant tusk. Your head rush.
It's the first time you ever hear Raekwon. It's the first time you ever hear Method Man and on. And you can hear them fighting for recognition on every track, trying to out-rap each other and let the world know what their style sounds like. And I think that's part of what makes the album so exciting is every verse is so hungry on it.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. Ray said, when I talked to him, and you'll hear this later, he said that it wasn't quite what you would expect in terms of maybe some people would think they were like writing together every day, all in the studio, nine men at the same time. But it wasn't really like that. People would come in and out of the studio. But even still, like you're coming into the studio and you're Method Man or Raekwon and you hear like what Ghost laid down. And you're like, oh, shit, I got to top that. I got to compete with that. Like not in a malicious way, but just in a way like you said. So I got to stake my claim on here, too, and keep the standard high. That, yeah, you have a duo or a trio who has that element and they feed off of each other. Imagine feeding off of nine people. Like, you know, that's just, you're just relentlessly competitive in that kind of setting. I was researching just about the album and I saw Method Man. He said that the way M-E-T-H-O-D Man, the single came about. He thought it was happenstance. He was just there by himself one day and RZA played the beat and he liked the beat and he just jumped on it. And then you think about how Can It Be Also Simple with like Ghost and Ray, which I feel like is a precursor to like Only Built for Cuban Links. I feel like you could put that song right on Cuban Links. And then even Seventh Chamber with GZA, like, yeah, you would think it's like just it just happened that way, but then these happen to be these three solo songs. And Ghost and Ray is not a solo song, but it was like similar to what we heard on Cuban Links. So those happen to be the three of the main solo albums after 36 Chambers. So maybe good leaders like RZA, they have a way of making it seem like it's a happenstance or something just happened by chance, but this is still in their vision the whole time. And they're guiding you, even if it seems like that's not the case. But maybe he, in his head, he's, yeah, I got this beat. I want this to be the single to launch Method Man. He might think it's like an organic thing, but no, this is my intention right here. I was just thinking about that because this was like, honestly, this is the first time I ever listened to the album in a critical sense, honestly, just to listen and reflect for the pod. Usually I just listen to it because I love it. It's literally the second album I ever bought. But yeah, just listening to it intentionally for those nuggets, you raise intention in hindsight.
You always hear this kind of intelligence at work, the perfect dialogue sample at the perfect moment. And even with the sequencing, the fact that tracks 7 and 8 are Wu-Tang Clan and Nothing to Fuck With and Cream in a row, two of the strongest hip-hop hooks ever on the same album on a debut. It's amazing, too, that for that short period of time, RZA got all these guys to listen to him, too. You're going to be first, you're going to be second. They actually went along with it. People say, oh, it's too bad they couldn't really stay together longer as a cohesive group, but it's inevitable when you think about it. How do you tell artists this talented, no, you got to wait another 2 years for your solo debut? How long will people put up with that kind of thing? Not necessarily that long, but he did enough to get the whole thing rolling in a way that nothing really ever has since as far as a master plan.
30 years later, there's not much more that can be said about RZA's curatorial abilities, but yeah, just the way he laid it out, even with the skits we hear on the album, I think it's Ghost and Ray, or Ghost is somebody at the end of M-A-T-H-O-D, man. And like, they end up being, like we said, like the first solo stars. Even that was intentional. Like, RZA knew who he wanted to have vocally on the album to highlight their charisma and get the fans and listeners acquainted with them. Like, every little aspect of it was just so intentional. And you just, you hear it more so in hindsight now.
And of course, the wild card in the whole thing is you had ODB in the group, Old Dirty Bastard. And he managed to keep him in the group. And it's not a ton, but every time he lets loose on this album, on any album, this absolutely insane singular energy just pops out. And there's never really been anything like him before or since.
He doesn't show up a lot on the album, or as much as I would want him to show up on the album, but that's like indicative of why he's such a charismatic, like one-of-one kind of force, because he's just, now you see him, now you don't. Like, and if he were like, oh, the consistent guy who was there every day, who was just like, I don't know, maybe he characteristically, maybe he wouldn't have that same artistic appeal. It's like a chicken or egg kind of thing. That's just, that's part of the package is what I'm trying to say. There's nothing comparable, not to the same extent where it's like Ghost, Ray, GZA, Method Man, ODB, like not to that volume, not at all. And yeah, to be able to, that's part of the miracle that I was talking about earlier, to be able to not only get them together, but to be able to have them, to be able to guide them and have them listening to you for 5 years, like 8 men with their own goals, their own agendas. Especially once you get famous, you might just, you have your own goals. You want to go solo. You might want to explore other things outside of music. But then he was able to keep them collectively focused for a time just on the W. Like, listen, let's just do what we can do for the W right now.
I think one thing that may be under discussed as far as Wu-Tang at the time was the heavy influence of 5% or stuff on a lot of the lyrics and ideology. It's always lurking in the background.
That's just heavily reflective of the Nation of Gods and Earths being a heavy movement in New York City around that time. I think the prime of it was more in terms of its relevance within street culture was like the late 80s, early 90s, or even people who might have been in the streets living a certain lifestyle. They were still like interested and expected to have knowledge of self, as they say, and just that understanding of those 5% elements and just the black man as God, just all of those kind of theoretical elements. You hear it like inherently within the album, like you said. So yeah, it's a time capsule for sure. You don't really, it's not, that movement is not as prevalent as it was at one point.
There's definitely a lot of time capsule elements in the lyrics. Even the reference to forming like Voltron, which I think was the first of its kind in hip hop back then, is now an antique. References to Nixon and the PLO and all sorts of things that are in the past at this point. But at the same time, it's incredibly timeless. When people use the term boom bap and talk about the golden age of New York hip hop, this, some Mobb Deep stuff, Illmatic, these things are in the dictionary next to that. I got to admit that for me, anything with that production still feels a little bit like home.
Yeah, no, absolute same. Absolute. Yeah, even being in DC, that just so, I just so happened to be, my first exposure to hip hop was like, besides what was on like BET and MTV or whatever, but like beyond that, I was in tune with the golden era, so to speak, 36 Chambers, Illmatic, Ready to Die, Mobb Deep. So that sound is just, That's my default sound. If I'm like, people will be like, oh, what are you listening to? Yeah, I'll probably be listening to like newer shit too, but there's also a chance that I'm just like heavy in a quote unquote boom back bag, like just listening to that classic sound. And then obviously there's the element of, at this point, 30 years later, it's just the newer entries in that style or that aesthetic, it's so obviously like cues to what was going on in that era, like the early era. It almost feels like inherently, like hip hop has this way of, even by virtue of the production, it feels like a cover song, even if it's not, like, you're not literally like rapping Bring the Ruckus again. But if you cue to the, like the distorted sample and the dusty drums, and even with the bass, like they know what you're getting at. They know what the lineage is.
When you try to find where's the influence of this album and this group today, one thing you could look at is, was there ever another kind of group of artists that started the same way and split off into solo acts? And the closest thing is probably Odd Future. It's not a one-on-one analogy, but there are some similarities there, at least structurally.
Yeah, I think that would be that. They would be the closest comparison if you were to make one, because it's, yeah, they're a miracle too, like Tyler, Frank Ocean, Earl, like Sid, like all of them together in one group. Yeah, that's pretty rare as well. But I guess I feel like you just see the remnants more ideologically than just like people trying to be like the new Wu-Tang, more so people just who are like non-conformist and just putting out records that like aren't mixed to the radio standard, or just hookless songs, just long songs. Like, even you don't hear long songs as much anymore, but just since then, since the album, like a lot of those elements cue to Wu-Tang and RZA being brave enough to knock down that door and be like, all right, we're gonna do things our way, and it worked. And then other people were able to see, okay, we don't have to conform to just what the record label expects from us to try to appease the top 40 sound through a rap lens. We can do what we want. I just feel like, maybe it's really broad to say, but anybody who's just, like I said, nonconformist and doing what they want to do, especially sonically and with their own lingo, their own aesthetic, they, whether they know it or not, like within the lineage, they owe, or not owe, but it traces back to what Wu-Tang did with 36 Chambers for sure.
And like you said, it's probably not surprising that there haven't been a ton of other groups of nine people who then spawned five or six solo superstars, because the odds are just against you. The odds of finding nine people as talented as that from the same area who know each other are beyond difficult. And the odds of keeping them together, it's just, it's all impossible. And it's amazing that despite the fact that they've sued each other and all sorts of stuff, Wu-Tang Clan just put out a great new song called Claudine. Plain to never hear that voice again, it never be the same. When the death is fresh, it feel like your soul is soaked in sadness and find yourself crying in the open. And it's actually a really fantastic song with a heart-wrenching verse from Ghostface about his mom, who he's rapped about before. There's a whole series of songs about his mom and his rough childhood. He had two disabled brothers, a long series of confessional songs. Here he is at his mom's grave, and it's actually one of the most haunting rap verses I've heard in a long time. 30 years later, if they could release a whole album as good as that, you'd really have something that would show they were doing at least Nas-level late-career work.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
At Evernorth Health Services, we believe costs shouldn't get in the way of life-changing care, and we're doing everything in our power to make it possible. Behavioral health solutions that also keep your projections at their best? It's possible. Pharmacy benefits that benefit your bottom line? It's possible. Complex specialty care that cares about your ROI? It's possible. Because we're already doing it, all while saving businesses billions. That's Wonder made possible. Learn more at evernorth.com/wonder.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
What's up, everyone? It's Reality Steve, your number one source for all things Bachelor Nation and reality TV. Every day, I'm giving you the behind-the-scenes juice and your info on all your Bachelor Nation stories and also interviewing some of your favorite reality stars. My name has been synonymous with spoilers, but I'm so much more than that. Give me a listen.
The Reality Steve Podcast, part of the Believe Network. Just search BLEAV on YouTube or wherever you listen.
Yeah, absolutely. And honestly, most of them, or if not all of them, I can't really say that any of them that I've listened to in recent years sound like bad, but Method Man still just barring up, going toe-to-toe with like today's Conway, Rome Streets, other artists I can think of. He's just like really tapped in with that indie rap scene. Ghost still delivering, like you said, sharp verses and being very introspective and telling stories. And Raekwon is still just like super sharp, like from top to bottom. Yeah, like you said, I think the X factor would probably be the production and how they decide to go about that. I know that Claudine was produced, it says it's produced by Mathematics. I think that's the song, because I interviewed RZA a couple months ago, and RZA, he hinted at a song that gave him the quote-unquote Wu-Tang feel, and it was produced by Mathematics. So yeah, like you said, if we could get, you know, 11 songs or 9 songs in that pocket with that kind of production quality, then hell yeah, I'm all for it. And they've been touring for the past couple of years. RZA, when I talked to him, he said it seems like they'd be open to it. And like you said, to reference something you said earlier, like they've been through a lot, like legally suing each other, not seeing eye to eye at times, but I think like they may be one of the few exceptions to just like the music group, the music crew as real family. Because I think like they'll have their issues and get into it here and there, but like you said, at the end of the day, they're touring together, they're still making songs together. It's rarely if ever crossed the line where I feel like, oh wow, I don't think they'll be able to get back together after this. Because I think just they have that familial kind of respect no matter what. Okay, I might not be seeing eye to eye with you right now, I might not want to do the Wu-Tang thing right now, but maybe in time we'll do it again. And I'll always, like, even with the Method Man touring thing recently that occurred, where I think they said they were trying to get him to be on the tour with Nas and Busta Rhymes, the tour that they were just on last year, and he was just like, I'm acting, I have a lot of stuff going on, I can't be on the tour. But when it came time to come to Jersey, he came out for that one. He's like, all right, listen, I'll do this one for y'all since y'all are my brothers. So it wasn't a complete, sometimes you'll see with groups and rock bands and stuff, they'll just be estranged forever. It's never seemed to be like that with them.
We should probably mention the run that followed the debut. Like you were saying, it's not just a bunch of great albums, but it includes ones that are arguably among the greatest rap albums ever made. Only Built for Cuban Links, Liquid Swords, Supreme Clientele. And I must say, I have a soft spot for RZA's Bobby Digital album. I might be alone in that.
And then again, like we said, just for RZA to know who he wanted to highlight on the album. And those ended up being like those first main generation of debut albums that were just all kind of genre defining in their own right. Like you said, I guess I'm gonna give a spoiler for the Raekwon interview. I wish if he had a little bit more time, I wanted to ask him if he felt like Only Built for Cuban Links is like the best album ever. Cause honestly, I hate ranking and rating art, to be honest. Like, I don't have that experience with like art. It's like subjective, it's hard to rate. But if I had to, that just might be like number one for me. Just the total package of it, just the storytelling, the production, the way Ghost and RZA were going at it on there. I would have wanted to ask him if he felt that way or if he even cared to think that way. But yeah, like you said, to even have an album that could be considered that without you laughing when I said it just indicates the quality of the solo work after 36 Chambers.
Yeah, it's an incredible album, and it's a good way to lead into your interview, which we'll play in a second. But and I guess you talked to Raekwon about this documentary that's long in the works about this album. And one thing that's interesting, because I prepared for this Ghostface interview that didn't happen for whatever reason, but Only Built for Cuban Links was almost just as much of a Ghostface album. They were working so closely together at the time, and Ghost was so intent on setting up his own solo album that was to come, which would be Iron Man. And he came really close to stealing the spotlight in a lot of songs, and Raekwon didn't seem to mind at all. He seemed to love giving Ghost his moments on the album. But yeah, let's hear Andre G and Raekwon.
There are great albums, there's classic albums, and then there's albums that are just pillars of music history where nothing is the same afterwards. Like, these guys kicked in the door, their own lingo, their own style, their own aesthetic. Nobody involved gave any fucks about conforming to anything that was going on at the time. The album went triple platinum, but the impact is way deeper than the numbers. Today, I'm here with Raekwon, one of the foundational figures of that album, a man tied with Method Man for the most appearances on the album with 8.
What's up, family? I like that. I like how you laid that out.
My first question, does it feel like 30 years ago?
Nah, do it feel like 30 years ago? Not at all, man. Not at all. Like, I mean, I be bugging. I still be asking myself that, too. Like, damn, it's 30 years later. But nah, it don't feel like that. You know, it actually feels about like 10 years later to me. I still feel like we still got a lot in the tank left, though, you know, to share to the world. But it's a blessing, man. You know, this game, when we stepped in this game, we was in our early 20s, all of us. Yeah, 30 years, just, you know, 3 decades just said, shh, you know, but it don't feel like it to me.
Yeah, for sure. People talk extensively about RZA and his 5-year plan for the Wu-Tang Clan. He told NPR in 2013, he said, "I want all of y'all to get on this bus, be passengers, and I'm the driver. And nobody can ask me where we going. I'm taking us to number one. Give me 5 years, and I promise that I'll get us there." Is that how you remember him broaching the idea of the 5-year plan?
It was definitely, you know, let him take the wheel and, you know, see what's going to happen, see what it could do. But for the most part, yeah, you know, he definitely seen what he seen. He believed in himself, and that's what we loved the most. We loved the fact that he was so confident and so, you know, passionate about what he felt that we could do collectively. So we was all like, yeah, yo, you know, we're going to hear you out, but we also going to communicate as a team, you know? So it was always about the, you know, the crew actually sitting down and discussing every game plan of what we wanted to do, you know, discussing that game plan, making sure at the end of the day it made sense. And, you know, we would actually really hear him out and give him that opportunity to represent for us. But everything was always pre-planned.
And 36 Chambers is such a distinct album sonically. Sometimes being innovative can be polarizing, and sometimes people can't always see the same vision. Yeah. And in this case, it's 9 different people. So I'm wondering, throughout that creative process, how much was everyone aligned on trusting the creative process?
Especially
the unique production decisions on the album.
I got to take my hat off to the Abbott, you know, for basically, like I said, driving. You driving, you the producer. We believed in him, you know what I mean? I think that's the biggest thing. When you sit down with somebody that you love and respect and you see their passion, he was bringing us somewhere that we was totally new at going. So when it came down to really having a game plan of really executing the music, how it's going to sound, how it's going to come out, yeah, RZA by landslide, he was the guiding light. All we did was participate lyrically. As far as the music, yeah, we know good beats when we hear good beats, but I think RZA was so deep in his craft that we just ain't even challenged nothing that he wanted to do and just let him fly. Yo, that's what it is. Yo, we listen to it. Yeah, that shit is raw. Bow, bow, bow. Next thing you know, we rhyming on it. You know what I mean? And then he would go back, you know, and add his additional touches and changes, because that's what we loved about him. He was a producer to us. Me, I know him from the producing era and the rhyming era. So for him to really have his producer hat on, we was like, yo, you got it right. You know where you're going with it. So we're going to follow suit.
Can you take me into what those initial sessions were like with the group? How did you get that creative groove with each other?
Like I said, we was all cats from the neighborhood. You know, he already knew the potential that we had on the mic. Far as lyrics was concerned, he would call some of us to come to his house, and some of us would work, you know, at the moment. Some of us would come there another day and work at the moment. So it was a lot of, you know, everybody passing each other, whatever the case may be. But it really wasn't a lot of us being there collectively together, because at that time it was still 1 foot in, 1 foot out. Certain joints that we heard other cats doing within the group, we was inspired, and we was like, yeah, yo, he killed that right there. You know what I mean? Yeah, that's one in the bag, you know? So what RZA was doing was basically creating his own a compilation of hearing us all do our thing. And when it came down to it, everybody was just like, yo, yeah, that's hard. You know, and that that became the driving force to building the group. You know what I mean? Because once we started to know the potential that each one of us had, it was kind of like sparking us all to feel like, yo, you know what? I got to represent the same way I heard that one. You know, the same way I heard Method Man. It's like the same way I heard Shimmy Shimmy. It's like, damn, you know, you got to step your shit up. So a lot of times we weren't in the room at the same time, but we actually made sure that we participated when it came to hearing what he had to say.
Do you have a favorite studio session or most memorable studio session from that time?
Well, the favorite spot to be was really his crib. You know, he had a place on Staten Island. You know, he had a basement. You know, I wouldn't call it a basement. I would call it like a studio apartment where it's like the one room that it had. It was like a small room, and he had all his equipment in there. And we would all just crash there. We would all just come there throughout the night. Sometimes it would be 12 o'clock at night. Sometimes it would be 3 o'clock at night. But we felt like we was in his studio then, because the crib was shaped, it was looking like a studio. So, you know, we would come crash there, stay till the morning. You know, some of us broke day there, some of us stayed to a couple of hours. It depends on the moment, but the crib was so small, you would barely be able to get all of us in there at the same time.
Can It Be All So Simple with Ghostface Killah? That's a track that felt like, in hindsight, felt like a precursor to Cuban Links.
Started off on the island, AK Shannon, brothers wailing, gunshots thrown the phone dialing. Back in the days, I'm 8 now, making a tape now.
Right, I'm wondering if you could take me into just the writing, recording process for that one.
That was definitely one of our favorite songs on the album. You know, at that time, we were confident in what we were sharing with the world, and we also wanted to give the world a glimpse into how shit go down in Staten Island. And a lot of times, you know, things wasn't simple for us. So when he made that track and had Gladys' voice on it, and it felt so warm, but still, it made you talk about real shit. It took us from having, you know, all this energy and this rah-rah to really reflecting now on how we were living. So, you know, me and Ghost, we definitely felt like we could handle that track. And you're right, at the end of the day, that is like a cousin of Cream, because it describes real shit that's going on in the neighborhood. I talked about my situation a little bit, you know, on growing up, you know, hearing stories about my father that I never knew, how he was a hustler, and, you know, at the same time, he was an addict. You know, so we were just kind of like writing according to real shit that was going on in our life. You know, Ghost was talking about, you know, he had visions of us going gold, you know, having cess crops one day. You know, because that hustle shit never really left us. We always was street peasant hustlers out there trying to make something happen. So we were just basically giving y'all an insight of our world and just letting y'all know it wasn't that simple for us, you know, but we were able to make it through, you know, and be here today to give y'all what we're giving y'all. So that song is definitely it's a classic song, though. Every time I perform that song, it makes me think about those days, you know what I mean? Those hustling days, those struggle days, those days of not knowing where you're going, not knowing where what's going to happen. So it was a good track.
Yeah, for sure. Do you feel like that was the first moment where you realized the creative synergy that you and Ghostface had, or was there a prior moment?
Nah, see, you know what makes the Clan so ill is the fact that when we came to y'all, we came like a pack of now ladies or some shit like that with different flavors in it. So we all knew who was going to be the ones that's going to talk a certain way on the mic, because we was basically assembling ourselves to be everything that an MC is supposed to be. You know, be able to give you that energy, be able to talk about real shit, be able to flip flows, be able to be intelligent, be able to give you visions of narrations of stories and all that. So we wanted to, you know, capture every piece of what an MC represent. And all of us had that within each other. So when it came down to songs like Cream and Can It Be, RZA knew I was more of a street narrator, somebody that come from out of the streets, that been in it, lived in it. You know what I mean? I never try to act like I had all this money or whatever the case may be. Yeah, we was making a couple of dollars, but we were still dumb street hustlers trying to be smart and intelligent and trying to learn from our mistakes. And that's what we did. We learned from our mistakes. We took the good with the bad. And, you know, that was something that never was going to leave me, because when it came down to MCing, like I said, I never really knew my full-fledged potential. I just knew how to talk about real things, real shit, you know, because I come from the Coogee Rap, Rakim era, you know what I mean? The Kane era, where lyrics meant something, talking about reality, street shit. I'm just a combination of all those cats, like Rick, you know? You know, so RZA knew what to sit in front of me and say, yo, how you feel about this? Go this way with it, go that way with it. You know, so that made us, you know, super authentic, because he was, while I was doing this, he was doing that kind of vibe. He was over there bouncing this way. He was over there doing that. And that's what made the Clan special.
So I feel like a lot of fans might have like a perception with those bigger records where it's like a lot of y'all on a song that y'all are like all writing together and recording together. But like you said, it wasn't necessarily like that all the time. Right. So with those bigger records, I was wondering, you know, how did that process usually go? Did those just gradually come together or?
Nah, the way those went is that it was all about the beat, you know, and once we heard the beat collectively, it was like some of us might have been there before the beat actually was fully done, or some of us might have just walked in on it, you know, and been like, oh shit, yo, this shit is mean. And you heard somebody doing a verse, or, you know, you like, oh shit, you know what I mean? Like when I heard it, it was already a couple of members on it already, you know? And at that time, Inspector Deck, his pen game was just, his pen game was delicious at that time. And, you know, for him to be one of the illest writers in the game, you know, he was the one that basically kind of like spearheaded Hit Records with us when it came down to Protect Your Neck, you know, which put us on the map. I tell Deck to this day, like, yo, nigga, you was responsible for setting that off, you know what I mean? And, you know, Deck's a humble dude, you know, he don't get flabbergasted. He just going to do his job. But I heard his verse on Triumph, and once I heard his verse on Triumph, I knew it was a hit, and I knew everybody was going to follow suit. Some of us was in the studio connecting the dots at the time, you know, and some of us had walked in later on. So that sometimes be how chemistry works with the Clan. And then RZA, he starts to do his Scrabble thing and, you know, chop down a couple of bars from each member. Or it's really no potion to it. It's just about verses at that time that connect in the right places. You know what I mean? So when you hear a guy like Meth coming in after Deck on Triumph, it was just a perfect connection. And that's how it is. It's like building a building. You start from the bottom and you build it up. You got to get the frame right. You got to get the walls right. You got to do the windows. And to me, that's how these skyscrapers was made, with that kind of mentality.
I saw Method Man. He spoke on a point in his life where he said he was watching a Method Man video on TV, but he's at home in Staten Island and he's like eating ketchup and rice. He has notoriety. He's on TV, but he's not yet reaping the financial benefits. Yeah. I was wondering if you had a similar experience.
We always trying to believe in something that might help us get the fuck up out of our conditions. You know what I mean? This was a dream. This was something that we didn't know if it really was going to happen, but we believed in our brother who seen something in us. And it's like, we kind of helped each other where, yeah, he had the knowledge, he had the production, you know, he didn't have the lyrics though. You know what I mean? And here it is, we come with the will and the loyalty and the wordplay and the dedication, you know, it was a combination that created the whole situation. So it was one of those things where we all needed each other. But yeah, everybody was struggling still. Either you're a hustler or you a robber, you know what I mean? For us, we was in both worlds. So, you know, when it was time to do something positive, it was like, yo, let's go this way. You know, the streets is over right now. We you know, back then the streets was over. We knew it, and we knew, yo, put all the energy here, man. But yeah, when we started hearing our records, me, I already knew. I said, yo, once we know the people love it and they responding to it, they making sure that they respect what they getting, I knew we was off to the races. So I already was counting my money right there. Like, yo, we about to chew, so it's all good.
And so beyond 36 Chambers, I just wanted to ask you about, you know, future music. I saw in August 2020, you told Elliot Wilson that you were working on Only Built for Cuba Links 3 to close the trilogy. I was wondering what kind of update you can give the fans on that one.
But one thing about that album, man, it's like, I never knew that it was going to be a Godfather type of mentality with it, you know, where people are want to see these trilogies and these, you know, this whole thing, you know. And my thing was to make an album that felt like a movie. So, you know, just to give everybody an update on 3, you know, I've been sitting down with, you know, my team and my family. We've been talking about it. I have records that I recorded, you know, back then that, you know, some of them never got released. And I'm like, these are joints that at the end of the day, when 3 come around, this is the sound that I think that people is going to respect. So, you know, just coming off that high horse with Cuba Links 2, which wasn't easy to do, you know, 3 was something that I was just saying, you know what, when the time is right, it's going to be right. But right now, like I said, you know, I choose not to give out too much information on it, but it's still on the blackboard far as coming out, you know, because once we do Cuba Links 3, that's it. You know what I mean? One thing about me, I believe in the trilogies, and that's it. You do three movies to it, you complete what it is that you want to get out of that. So it's still on the blackboard. Like I said, it's just about me really feeling like at the end of the day, it's that time. And that's how I am with my music. You know, everybody know the chef for making bodies of work, not so much of a single guy or whatever. Like, I like to make sure that when my fans get my music, once they put it in, that yo, you never got to touch it again. And that's what I always told myself making albums. It's like, yo, I want to make those albums that once you slide it in, yo, just chill. You could, whether you in your car, whether you listening to your headphones, whether you really want to just gravitate to painting a picture in your mind, Ray's going to come with those albums. So those albums I don't take for granted. I take my time with them, and I take my time with all my albums, and that's what allowed me to have X amount of classics under my belt, you know, is that you take your time with it, you don't rush it, you make sure you got all the everything, you got all the pieces there to make your fans feel like, damn, he really took his time making this work. So when 3 come, you gonna know that I gave it the same energy that I gave all my other albums. But when you playing with that whole Cuban Link, you know, that whole Cuban Link Casablanca legacy, I always want to take my time with that.
Mm-hmm. Raekwon, thanks again for your time. Is there anything else you want to tell the listeners about anything you have going on?
Oh, yeah, definitely, man. I want to tell my fans, you know, especially all the Cuban Link lovers, you know, I promised you guys a documentary. So right now, we almost finished with it. I'm happy. You know, this is something that I worked on for a long time, because when you got fans all over the world that is infatuated by this album that I made almost 20, 25 years ago, almost 30 years ago, actually, I know I had to tell a story on how this was designed and how it was made. So get ready. It's called The Purple Tape Files. It should be coming out the top of this year. You know, I'm working on it to where it may even come quicker. It may come a little bit after, but I'm a deep perfectionist when it comes to making classics, and especially about something that my fans love. So get ready for that. You know, like I said, of course, we got some good music coming out as well. All I can say is just get ready, man. Get ready. You know, chef always like to feed y'all a dish that y'all know. When it comes, that shit is gonna be right. It's gonna be good. But this documentary, like I said, it's explosive. It has about 50 to 60 of the most influential people in the culture of music, entertainment, sports involved, talking about how this had a lot to do with their livelihood and their way of living and becoming successful. So that's what's going to make it even more interesting, is that so many people had, you know, I was getting threats from my friends saying like, yo, I need to be involved with that, because what it did for my livelihood and what it did for me, it was so inspirational. So we got a ton of celebrities in it that wanted to be involved, and this is really going to be something explosive. I say that it may be one of the best, you know, music documentaries ever made. And I'm not saying it from a cocky standpoint. I'm just saying it from being real, because it's what we love to give to our fans. We want to give you the creme de la creme of it, the nooks and crannies, the good, the bad, the ugly, the what it took, the real conversations. So you're going to get all of that in this documentary. You know, so yeah. Get ready.
You heard him. Get ready for it. Get ready.
No question.
Yeah, Raekwon, thanks again. Thanks for your time. Thanks for, you know, reflecting on the album with us.
You got
and, it. Yeah, appreciate it.
You got it, brother. We talk soon.
And that's our show. We'll be back next week. In the meantime, subscribe to Rolling Stone Music Now wherever you get your podcasts. And please leave us 5 stars and a nice review on Apple Podcasts and Spotify, because that's always appreciated. But as always, thanks so much for listening, and we will see you next week.
Welcome to Talkville,
the ultimate Smallville rewatch podcast. Guest star Sarah Carter as Alicia Baker.
Although I didn't really work with her a lot.
But Tom did, and they had some real big smoochy scenes.
Yeah. Should we talk about that?
Could there be any more sex? What was a 3-page makeout scene that just kept going? Good Lord. We get it. They have chemistry.
Jump in now or catch up on any of the past seasons of Talkville on YouTube or wherever you listen.